Exodus 32 at verse 31. And Moses returned unto the Lord and said, O, this people have sinned a great sin, and have made them gods of gold. Yet now, if thou wilt forgive their sin, and if not, blot me, I pray thee, out of thy book which thou hast written. Now you'll keep your Bibles handy, won't you? Moses and his service found his strength in the sanctuary of God. Twice over in this book, you will get an expression like what we've read. Moses returned unto the Lord. The first time you'll find it in chapter 5, when the officers of the children of Israel rebelled against his leadership, and when he felt that his first great assignment had been a big failure. Where else could a man go but to the Lord? But this is different, more serious. The nation is on the verge of apostasy, led there by one of the leaders. Difficult time for Moses, for it was his own brother that was leading it. And in an hour like that, it is said, Moses returned unto the Lord. Your refuge is in the sanctuary. Your strength is in the presence of God. Moses was the first man that was called to lead a people. No one had ever been called to lead the nation before like this man. Thus there is found in the life of Moses principles of leadership that are original and unique. And while it is true that he is reckoned to be one of the greatest leaders of the people of God, and a great deal of ministry is taken up with the public side, and rightly so, have you ever noted that Moses was constantly the man that was hidden? He was way back at the beginning, he was hidden 3 months in his father's house. Then he was hidden in the Nile, in the ark. Then he was hidden for 40 years in the backside of the desert. At least twice over, he was hidden 40 days and 40 nights upon the mount. Then you have that wonderful experience when he was hidden in the cleft of the rock. And finally, can you visualize it? The day came that he turned his back upon the camp and walked up lonely Nebo's mount, hidden by God, for God buried him and no man knows the man that was hidden. Brethren, we'll need to cultivate a hidden life. There alone is our strength. That will become apparent when you seek to serve God. There is a something about a man that comes from the presence of God. And this chapter tonight will show that not all leaders are the same. And not all servants are the same. For Aaron was never a Moses. Sorry, yes, that's right. Aaron never was a Moses. This one says, when the people saw that Moses delayed to come down from the mount, Now in this chapter, from verses 1 to 14, Moses is on the mount. Verses 15 to 29, he's in the camp. And in the verses we read, he's in the sanctuary. On the mount, in the camp, in the sanctuary. Different experiences. Now I want you to note, he was away in the mount for 40 days and 40 nights receiving the pattern. The people became restless, for this one man was holding the nation for God. Oh, a tremendous responsibility, one man. Would you be that one man in a day of departure? Now we'll note his courage and his faithfulness shortly. The people approached Aaron. They said, "We don't know what's become of us." Make us gods. Brethren, they never would have approached Moses like that. But they could do it with Aaron. Is that right? Now, brethren, there are occasions when it's good to be unapproachable in certain things. It doesn't do on occasions to be too near the people. Better to be nearer God. Watch. So he made a golden calf and called a feast. Now watch. Hundreds of years later, Jeroboam, king of the northern kingdom, when the feast days drew near, saw a danger. He says, when these feast days come, the people will make for the south to the Rehoboam's kingdom and will never get them back. So he made two golden calves, and he set one in Dan and one in Bethel. Where did he get the idea from? Come, brethren, where did he get it from? Jeroboam got it from the failure of a good man. Oh, it's tragic when good men fail. You see, they'll hold it, and years later, they'll bring it forward. The failure of a good man. Up in the mount, God speaks to Moses. Moses, he says, it's time you were down, for they have turned aside quickly. Oh, how quickly they turned aside. How quickly Adam turned aside. How quickly Noah turned aside. How quickly Abram turned aside. How quickly Nahum and Abihu turned aside. How quickly Achan turned aside. How quickly we've all turned aside. If you drop your eye to verses 9 and 10, you have a divine suggestion. Now, it's an interesting way that God has betimes. You've probably noted it. He makes a suggestion to Moses that he has no intention, so to speak, of carrying out. He's making a suggestion to test Moses. It's a great thing when God will test the spirit of a man. Now he says, listen, Moses, they're a stiff-necked people. Now he says, I tell you what we'll do. Let my wrath consume them, and I'll make of thee a great nation. Oh, brethren, eh? Eh? What an opportunity. I'll make of thee a great nation. Eh? At the suggestion of God. Now, if you drop your eye to verses 11 to 13, you'll see the mettle of this man coming out. He's now pleading with God for a people that had sinned. He didn't turn round and say, it's true, Lord, they've let you down, and they've let me down. It's only but right that you should consume them and give me the honour of a new nation. Oh no, nothing like that. Verse 11, he says, Lord, you can't do it, and he pleads the grace of God. He says to them, Lord, Why doth thy wrath wax against this people that thou hast brought out of Egypt with great power and with a mighty hand? Lord, you can't do it. Your grace is at stake, demonstrated in your power. You can't do it. Verse 12. Lord, you can't do it. Your glory is at stake. He says, if you bring them out and slay them on the mountains, that's what their enemies will say. Imagine redeeming a people and killing them. Your glory is at stake. You cannot tarnish it by a judicial action like this. Verse 13, Lord, not only is your grace at stake, not only is your glory at stake, your faithfulness is at stake. For didn't you covenant with the fathers to give them that land? Lord, you can't do it. And his intercession prevailed. Man, it's great, brethren, when we can plead for others on the grounds of the attributes of deity. Not on the ground of a need of a people that had sinned, but on the ground that God must maintain his grace and his glory and his faithfulness in his actions. Now I'm down at verse 15 onward. He leaves the mount, the presence of God. Good to talk with God before you'll deal with the evil. Good to know something about a mountain experience before you'll touch it down here. And so he makes his way down with the tables of stones in his hand. As he draws near the camp, and I'm down now round about verse 19. As he looked at the camp, he saw the calf and the dancing. Later on, he saw their nakedness. For Aaron had made them naked. Will you listen to me? Nakedness has to do with sin. Before the fall, they were both naked, the man and the woman, and weren't conscious of it. A garment of light. But the first result of sin was this. When Adam and Eve partook of the fruit, they knew that they were naked. Got that? In a day of scanty clothing, that comes very near to nakedness. Remember, nakedness is always in the Bible connected with sin. As Moses looked at it, he threw the table of stones from him. And as they broke from crag to crag, he entered the camp. He took the calf and he ground it to burned it, ground it to powder, mixed it with water and made them eat it. You listening, brethren? One man against 600,000. Isn't that right? When Israel came out of Egypt, they had over 600,000 fighting men. And that day Moses stood for God, one man against 600,000, and held the ground for God. We're afraid to do it against 6 or against 30. We're turning our back. One man against 600,000, against a nation of over 2 million. Moses was faithful in the house as a servant. If you look at verses 21 to 24, he now faces Aaron. Oh, it's a difficult business. Difficult business. The thing had started in his own home. You know, they were a great family, blessed by God. Isn't that right? Aaron and Miriam and Moses. You'll find, if you like to turn to Numbers 12, that Moses was faced with them again, this time in a domestic situation, about his wife. Difficult thing when you've got to stand against your own kith and kin. So he took it up with Aaron. Verse 21 on. Now he says, Aaron, what did this people unto you that you brought this sin upon them? Aaron, a leader's not expected to be influenced by the people. Are you listening, brother? In a day when leadership has gone by the board, and leaders are influenced by their people, by the people and by the families, here's a man, and he faces Aaron and he says, listen, Aaron, you should never have allowed the people to influence you. You should have influenced them. Aaron replies, verse 22 to 24. Now he says, don't be angry, Moses. You know what they're like when they're set in mischief. They said to me, make us gods. And so, verse 24. Oh, it's tragic. He says, I said unto them, whoever has any gold, bring it to me. So they gave it to me. Well, listen to this. I cast it into the fire, and out walked this calf. Eh? Oh, it's tragic, isn't it? Eh? Sweet. I'll come back to that in a moment. There's something behind that we've possibly missed in our reading, but I'll come back. It's then that he, verse 26, he stood and he said, who is in the Lord's side? Difficult day, because they'll need to stand against their brother, their companion, their neighbour. They'll need to draw the sword in the name of the Lord. Who is on the Lord's side? And Levi swung behind Moses. And at the close of the day, 3,000 graves were dug. Tremendous, isn't it? Now please, drop your eye to verse 30. Came to pass in the morrow that Moses said unto the people, ye have sinned a great sin. Now I will go up unto the Lord. Peradventure I shall make an atonement for your sin. Ah, this is interesting. He now faces the people with graves freshly dug. Now I want you to notice something. Now notice it carefully. I want you to notice, please, that when he faced the people about their sin, he never told them that it was his intercession that saved them. And if he hadn't pleaded for them, they would never have been there that day. Now, he never told them that. My, we would have boasted about it, eh? We would have said, listen, boys, you wouldn't be here today if it hadn't been for me. Never mentioned it. Just a minute. When he faced Aaron that day, he never told Aaron that he had saved his life. For Deuteronomy 9 verse 20 tells you, Moses told the people then, Deuteronomy 9 verse 20, that God wanted to kill Aaron, and Moses' intercession saved him. And he never said it. He never informed Aaron about it. That's tremendous, isn't it? Eh? The man that stood against Aaron and the people was the man that had prayed for them. Eh? Oh, brethren, when people sin, we become hard. Isn't that right? Isn't there always a danger with all of us that when we are going to uphold divine honour and divine majesty, we become hard and bitter against the people that have let God down? Isn't that right? You see why? Because we've ceased praying for them once they sinned. That's our trouble. We've nothing to do with them, not even at the throne. It's wrong, brethren. I would like to think, wouldn't you? I would like to think if a day came that I found myself in that position, I would like to think that the man that stood against me was the man that prayed for me most. And I would like to think if a day came that ever I had to stand alone and maintain something for God's honour and God's majesty and God's glory, that the people I stood against, I prayed for most. You read 1 Corinthians. Now, be honest, brethren. As Moses comes in with his, as Paul comes in with his pen to adjust this, that, and the next thing, it sounds a wee bit hard. Isn't that right? Adjustment's not easy. As I say, we're inclined to be a wee bit hard when we're trying to maintain something for God. 2 Corinthians 2 says this. Out of much anguish of heart and many tears I wrote unto you. His tears were staining the page as he wrote. Behind it all, there was a heart that loved the people. Verse 30. He faces the people and he says, now, you've sinned a great sin, but I will go unto the Lord. Peradventure I shall make an atonement for your sin. And he never told them what it was. Hey? Mind you, he could have boasted what he was going to do. Oh, brethren, can you see how selfless the man is? Hey? That was all he said. And Moses returned unto the Lord. You get the impression it was a well-worn road. He's now going to talk to the Lord about it. Will you notice, please, in verse 31, that he used the same language to God as he used to the people? We would be inclined to use stronger language to the people than we do to God. Now, right, always the danger of just going a wee bit too far with us all. When we're into the presence of God, they said, this people have sinned a great sin. They have gotten them gods of gold. They have broken the commandment. Yet now, if thou wilt forgive their sin. You'll notice, please, the dash, an unbroken sentence. It never was completed. He couldn't complete it. Oh, was it possible that the divine grace could overlook the governmental consequences of their sin? He could never make a penal atonement. But it would be would it be possible that after 3,000 and died, that further governmental consequences could be saved? He raised that, for God judged that again at the end of the chapter. Just a minute. Forgive their sin. But if not, blot me out. Lord, if you can't do it, I'll go to the wall. Lord, if you can't commit yourself to abstain from the governmental consequences, then Lord, take it out on me. Don't touch them. I'll bear my breast. I'll take it. Lord, they've let you down, they've let me down. But take it out of me. Oh, brethren, eh? Loved them that much, he was prepared to suffer the consequences of their sin. Oh, brethren, how hard we've been, eh? And God looked down on Moses. And he saw a miniature Calvary. He saw the very spirit of Christ in Moses. He saw a man willing to take the... I know it's not penal, but you understand what I mean. He was prepared to take the stroke that should fall on them. That's love, brethren. That's faithfulness. That's glory. As I've said, sometimes we get hard. We stop loving them. We stop praying for them. We just have nothing to do. Little wonder they seldom come back. Don't you see what I'm trying to impress is this, that love for the people and sacrificing for them is not incompatible with holiness. You take yourself. When you were in your sins, God loved you. It didn't affect his holiness, did it? Oh no. Oh no. And you see, sometimes when people sin, and the the administration must take its course, and maybe ultimately they're excommunicated. Do you still love them because they're God's? Love them so much, if it were possible, you'd rather take the stroke than them? Do they get the impression that when you're dealing with them, that you're dealing in holiness? But that behind it all, do they get the impression that you love them dearly? You're doing it for their own good. And it's breaking your heart as you do it. And God looked down. Oh, how it magnified Moses in the sight of God and the people. Lord, I'll take it. Can you hear Paul saying, I wish I were accursed for my brethren's sake, as he thought of godless Israelites? Say, would there be a reward for that sort of thing? Would there be compensation for that? For not this. There's only one man capable of it. Yes. Oh, it's just as unique as that. You see, brethren, you would agree with us. The big things in Christianity. The big things. The tremendous things are only touched by a few. There came a day when a Peter walked on the water and did what Christ could do. Only one in 12 could do it. Only one in 12 could do it. Would there be compensation? If you turn to the next chapter, show me thy glory. No man can see me and live. I know, Lord, I know. Watch. Listen, Moses. Listen. There's a place by me here. Just at the rock. Now you stand there, won't you? Now listen, Moses. I will cause my glory to pass by. Oh. Well, you can't describe this. I'll cause my glory to pass by. And I'll put you in the cleft of the rock. I'll just push you in a little. And as I pass by, Moses, I'll put my hand out there. And he says, as I pass by, I'll take away my hand. And you'll get a glory of me from the rear. As if the naked glory from the front no man could live. And he caused it to pass by. And Moses saw. Tell me. You know God? No, I'm not asking if you know about him. Do you know God? That's your strength. That's your power. Therein lies your energy. A carnal man will only damage everything if he raises his hand to touch anything. Your glory will lie in the experience on the mount. And in the sanctuary. For that's it, brethren. You're with God before it and you're with God after it. And the very Spirit of Christ is marking it. And in a dark, dark day, as you reach the end of the chapter, the sin is forgotten before the sacrificial spirit of a Moses. And the glory that it beheld. That's it. There's a price to be paid for these things. But it's not the way that ordinary folks do things. nor the way that most brethren would do it. But there's a higher, more glorious way that's found in fellowship with the eternal. To touch the darkest scenes of testimony with a spirit of self-sacrifice, of consuming passion and love for the people, acknowledging the rightness of divine judgment, but if need be, in a spirit that would take the weight of it all and save the people. Lord, don't touch them anymore. So may the Lord bless his word.